Before we begin, we wanted to issue a content warning for this week's episode. There is a frank discussion of sexual violence, assault, and trauma that some may find disturbing.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Summer Fright School. You are here in the West Craven Detention Center because you've been a very bad student all year and you have to do summer school. Joe.
Jeez. Way to stigmatize remediation.
You've been very naughty. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm okay. You know, it's so funny where this is our second consecutive time recording in person.
Right.
And I've forgotten how to do it.
I know, I tell you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It really does. You need practice for things.
Yeah. We don't have a fancy studio that everybody can go to, you know, and that just has been sitting in stasis. It's like, you know, all of our stuff has been packed up and carried about and, you know, we've had to make do for the last year and a half. So whatever. We're figuring it out.
Yeah,
hopefully our voices are in your earballs, and if that's the case, then we've succeeded. We achieved what we needed to achieve.
And if not, we're sorry, but thanks for hanging in there with us.
How's your week been?
It's been good. Oh, happy Pride!
I know that I was going back and forth about what I was gonna say at the beginning, if I wanted to talk about Pride or not, because it might confuse the listener. Because if you're in other parts of the country, Pride Month is over. It happened in June. That's when we get to be gay, and now we're not gay anymore. That's supposed to stop June 30th or 31st. Is it just 30th? I don't know.
30 days in September, April, June, and November. So yes, there are 30 days.
So anyways, but San Diego celebrates Pride in July, so everything, you know, all of my social media for, you know, local San Diego stuff is on fire with faggotry, flaming faggotry. So, you know, you just forget that Pride is still going, so, which is fun. You know, actually, there's Pride goes, I think some places till almost October, because there's Oceanside Pride, South Bay has Pride in September.
Of Palm Springs Pride, I think, is the last one, and it's in November. It's the first week of the first few days of November this year.
See, so we just, you know, Pride, wear your Pride all year round.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I heard something where it's starting in June, you can pretty much attend a Pride every weekend until Palm Springs Pride, if you wanted to, if you tried really hard.
Right. Yes. These being the wealthier of our tribe, apparently.
Yes. The wealthier, the whiter, the fitter.
Yeah, I'm not doing any of that nonsense. I don't really do anything for Pride. Somebody asked me this weekend.
I'm sorry, your lip balm you just did was a skull. So
you've never seen my skull lip balms?
No.
Oh my gosh, I have a million of them. I buy them in bulk and then I just tuck them everywhere. Yeah, they're by Rebels Refinery. Ding. Find it on iTunes. I think I buy them right off their website, and they have sales during the year, you know, so I just keep an eye out and then I'll buy three or four boxes of them, and I tuck them into my jackets, my all my bags, my makeup bags, all have them. I give them out. I gave this past holiday season, I gave everybody little skull lip balms. They come in vanilla, tropical fruit, or passion fruit, vanilla, passion fruit, and mint.
Which one is that one? Mint?
This, I think, is the passion fruit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I prefer the mint. I actually prefer all menthol kinds of things, mint gum and mint lip stuff. But they're all the same color, so you really don't know what you're getting. You just grab it, and you're like, oh, yep, this is the tropical fruit one. But they're all, they don't change your lip color or anything. It's just a chapstick. So, you know, again, I freaking love living in this time frame where when I was a kid, there's no way, you know, this kind of stuff didn't exist, especially not outside of Halloween. But now all year round, you can get goth shit. We're a whole, like, you know, niche market to sell shit to. Yes. In the shapes of skulls and stuff.
The goth industrial complex.
Exactly. That's so funny. I can't believe you never noticed those before.
I mean, like, every time I look at this shelf, like, everything looks, you know, it's all spooky little knickknacks,
yeah.
Repurposed bottles that are made out of skulls. But then I just saw you, like, oh, he has one of those, like, EOS lip balmy things, and I look and it's a little skull. I'm like, okay.
That is sort of what it is that design concept.
Yeah,
just a skull. Rebels Refinery. So not a sponsored post, I do love their lip balms. I've been wearing them for years since they started that, and yeah, in the bathroom I've got a drawer full of them. I just grab them when I need them.
Nice. Look at you.
I was actually cleaning out an old book bag because school is going to return in person, I guess, maybe in the fall. And so I was like, oh, man, I need to, like, find a book bag. And I found, one of my skulls in there. I'm like, oh, awesome. So I don't need to get a new one. I'll just leave that one in there. So
I'm bringing it up so that way I can look. I can make sure to purchase them myself. Ooh, there's a sale right now.
Oh, nice. There we go. Yeah, there's usually some kind of buy, you know, whatever, get whatever, or 30% or whatnot. So, and I'm sure if you signed up, they'll send you a coupon as well.
Hey, if anyone's listening from Rebels Refinery, sponsor us. We just gave you free press, free ads.
They are delish. I do enjoy them. So they have a whole bunch of products I actually like. I like, in general, I like that that company.
Nice.
So, yay. What else has been happening this week? Well, the American Horror Stories premiered. You did not come, so you have not yet seen it, have you?
No, I have not.
Yeah. It was all right. We'll talk, I guess, once you're able to see it. It was fun. The first two episodes are one story, even though it was like, oh, it's an anthology where every episode's going to be a different story. No, it started with a two-part episode that they released both episodes on Hulu.
Are they an hour long?
Yeah, like 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Okay.
It was all right. It was fun to revisit Murder House with a new story. There
Lovely.
Weren't any, none of like the cast, like from like Murder House was there, the ghosts that you know are in the house. There was some references, actually a couple things like a little popped up. So I don't want to say none, but none of the actors that you like know and love. Mm-hmm. Although rumor has it in the finale, they're going to return to Murder House, and Ryan Murphy said there are going to be. So we'll see. And I know that Evan Peters was photographed in like Tate Landon drag outside of the Murder House earlier this year or last year, whenever they were filming this. So I'm going to assume that we're going to see Tate at least. And they make reference to, there's like a therapist and stuff that they make reference to, oh, the therapist that lives here, you know, in the walls and whatnot. So it was all right. Wasn't mind blowing. It was more fun to have the company. You know, people were over watching it. It was, you know, that was a good time.
Nice. Back like the old days.
Yeah, exactly. So I am hoping that we're going to do something for the premiere, but I don't know. Now the Delta variant's going to kill all of us. So, you know, we, We'll see. LA, you know, they went back to masking full time.
Yes. And I was actually talking to our dear friend Delia before I came over to record. And she said that as of Saturday, they are back to masking indoors in Vegas.
In Vegas? Wow. Yeah. Because there, when I was visiting there, they were like, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. We don't really care. Just give us your money. Yeah. And don't die sitting up at the casino, you know. But yeah, so we'll see if things change.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're able to get vaccinated,
right?
Which, like, they're really the only real thing that is precluding anybody from getting vaccinated is religious, or in my mind, is like a religious exemption or allergy.
Yeah.
So, you know, get vaccinated, folks. It is your body, and do what you like.
That's true.
But,
yeah,
you know, I encourage you.
Yeah. I want everybody to be healthy and happy.
Yeah.
And I really want to have Halloween and go to cons and go to Not Scary Farm. And they're starting to unleash, you know, they're revving up their machine for this year. So I'm looking forward to that. I also want to hit, I think we should do, we've never done like the Universal or whatever they do. You know, we haven't done a lot of the other ones. So I think it's time we did another Drop Joe in the middle of some scary mazes and record it and see what happens. I think we need to do that again. But something different, not scary, because you've already been there.
Yeah. but Jimmykins hasn't.
That's true. Well, we'll definitely go. Don't worry. We're going to make plans. We're going to figure it out.
We're making evil plans.
Still working on that musical.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Final Girl Support Group came out this week, the book. I talked a little bit about it on, I think, a couple episodes. Grady Hendrix's new book, who wrote Satanic Panic with our dear love Chelsea Stardust directed.
Among many other books.
Among many other books, yes. I'm enjoying it. I've almost finished it. It's really fun. It's a great read. Like, if you're out there and you like to read and you like horror and you're a big horror fan, especially of like 80s horror, like slasher films, it's such a great homage. There's lots of Easter eggs, lots of stuff, you know, in there that you're just like, okay, yeah, I know what's going on here.
You finished this already?
Not yet. I'm almost done. Yeah. I'm like, I think I'm at 80% because I went to on the 13th. That was the release date for it, Tuesday the 13th. And I went to a live Zoom event with Grady.
Nice.
As like, yeah, he did a like a welcome to the Final Girl Support Group show. It was super fun. He's really, really funny. I do hope to get to see him actually live in person at some point in the future, because it was a very like, it was the first one, so he had some technical issues with Zoom and with his like slides, but you could tell what was there, that it, you know, like a big bulk of it he did do with the slides and stuff. So he had all kinds of like slasher references, and you know, he did that paperback Books from Hell book. So there were tons of information about these like obscure horror books, and he tied in. He did this whole thing about which actually this would be perfect for the other thing I want to talk about, like where the concept of like trans people in like horror comes from, like why, at least in his purview, where that kind of originates from, with like Ed Gein into Psycho, and then how that bled out into like, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and then Silence of the Lambs and, you know, on. It was really cool. It was a really neat, like, lovely little like just history of this like one trope in horror, and he explored it in a few other things by talking about these other books that also in different ways use that trope and, you know, use like transness as this monstrosity.
So
super fun, the show. And then so I'd ordered a signed copy of it through that, but I haven't gotten that yet. But I use this app again, dear listener, if you're also a dear reader, a constant reader, maybe, if you're in the Stephen King. There's an app, Libby, where you can, it's like, I mean, it's basically like a library card. You know,
yeah,
you
it's the get, for, you can order audiobooks, right? Or e-readers?
E-books, too, but like, you know, without like needing a library card. It just was really simple to like go on and use this. Now, obviously, I mean, I have a library card and stuff like that, but this just makes it really simple to like search. And I use San Diego's collection, so it's the San Diego Library. I just use my information there. If you have a library card, you can plug it into this app. So I found it like immediately available in ebook form. So yeah, I finished like 80% of it. I'm really enjoying it. We're just getting, it's very twisty. It's very cinematic. I mean, it reads like a horror film. So, you know, there, things keep twisting and turning and you're like, okay, I think I figured out who's doing it. And then it's somebody else. If you watch enough horror, you're going to kind of see where it's going. You know, I mean, it's clever, but it's not that beyond like horror. But again, I haven't finished it, so there could be more twists coming. But I think we kind of got to the final twist. But we'll see. But I am thoroughly enjoying it. I recommend reading in general, as we've discussed on the show.
I know, trying to force literacy down my throat
quite extensively. but the reason I said that about because of the Silence of the Lambs. So the Morbid Anatomy, which is sort of like a museum and, you know, educational work about
fat
morbid
people.
Stuff. Yes, exactly. Anyways, they are hosting in October 23rd. It's a Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. It is the Silence of the Lambs Book Club, live on Zoom, taught by true crime writer Harold Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-H-T-E-R. I don't know if that's Schechter or Schechter.
Probably Schechter.
I would think. He's the author of A to Z Encyclopedia of Serial Killers, along with, he's been, he has essays on crime, psychopathology, media violence. He's appeared in many newspapers and magazines, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, International Herald Tribune, blah, blah, blah. He's written for Law and Order. Also the Cosby Mysteries. Might want to take that one off of your CV. Featured as an expert on PBS's History Detectives. Although the Cosby Mysteries, is that Cosby? Is that Bill Cosby? I don't even know.
I have no
idea. Is that a thing? The Cosby Mysteries. Shall we?
It's probably Bill Cosby, but
I would imagine.
I wouldn't. Just, you know, let it be.
Well, I realized I said that, and then I was like, actually, I have no idea if this has anything to do with. Yeah, it is Bill Cosby. So okay. Yeah, I would probably want to get rid of that. anyways, not the point. Point is, he's hosting this really cool event that's going to be live on Zoom, talking about the Silence of the Lambs. And I was trying to see if there was anything about the specific. No. So it's, I think it's $30 to get on. So it's like a Zoom class. I can't find that information. Anyways, I'll link it in the show notes. But I thought that was kind of cool. You know, if you're a fan of that, of the movie, but also the novel, which is really great as well. That's something that's coming up, The Morbid Anatomy. I love them. I'm one of their Patreons. Mm. Patreon subscribers. One of the few of them and Rachel True.
Yeah.
anything? Oh, we were both talking before the show. This is the Joshua Show today. Joe's not saying anything. But no, we were just talking. You subscribe to Fangoria now.
Yes.
And we
I just did.
Got the new.
The new Fangoria issue.
Yeah. And
it was my birthday present to myself.
That's so fun. And you go and look at the pictures.
I read the articles. I read. I keep it in the bathroom so I can freak people out.
Oh, very nice. I like it.
But I thought there were some really good articles in this week, in this month's, this quarter, right? This quarter?
Yeah, they bring it out 4 times a year now. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was very excited because there are 18 pages devoted to Candyman.
Yes.
Including a new interview with Nia DaCosta about making the film and sort of bring it into this time period we're living in, bringing this story. There's a piece on the artists that contribute who did the artwork for the film, because the main character is like a photographer and an artist, and talking about like working together to create, you know, the work of the film. One of them had never seen Candyman or knew anything about it, so had to like kind of do research and really think about it in sort of a different way. Then there was another piece about the choreography of the film. And then a revisitation article of the original Candyman film. So super cool, great articles. And then
I have to say that I didn't read the Nia DaCosta interview because I want to wait till I actually see it and then go back and read the interview.
Okay.
I did read the one piece about the choreography, which I thought was really super interesting.
Yeah. No, it's great. So I definitely recommend, if you don't subscribe to Fangoria, you should check it out, or just, you know, pick up this month's latest issue. Mm-hmm. The cover of mine is The Werewolves Within with Sam Richardson, which I think is the new, it's what's his name, Josh Rubin, who did, what was that, Scare Me?
Yes.
And he also did like that Precious Plum and stuff with like comedy.
And he's a
College Humor.
Yeah. And that makes sense because Sam Richardson's a comedic actor. But
yeah.
I'm looking forward. That's in my queue.
I was trying to see I'm not sure what the cover looks like if you're not a subscriber, because they're two different ones. So if you're a subscriber, you get a different. Either way, it's the, what do they call this? Volume 2, number 12, July 2021. So there's a whole interview with him about making the new Werewolves Within film. And then another article called, I Was a Middle-Aged Werewolf. Talking about an oral history of that transformation from that werewolf movie. So revisiting American Werewolf in London. So overall, this is just me plugging the latest issue of Fangoria, and I was really glad that you got a copy and that you are, yeah, that you are subscribing.
I'm a subscriber now.
You're a subscriber. I bought they had sent me a gift card for something. I don't know what it was. I think I did a survey, and so they sent me like a $15 thing for there. So I bought a Fangoria shirt, but not the gay one.
Oh, not the
gay
one.
I just bought a regular black and red.
You don't like, you know, prismatic color.
Exactly. what else came out this week? I'm trying to think. Oh, the new Fear Streets, both are out now. So the whole trilogy is out. So we're gonna finish that, and then we'll be talking with somebody about it. But I don't want to talk too much about that yet. Did you watch anything this week? Anything come up for you?
Nothing really. I mean, it was another watching with my family week. So we watched this kind of awful movie. It stars Pierce Brosnan, Nick Cannon, Tim Roth, and Jamie Chung. I know, a veritable who's that of, you know, it's like
of who's that
of who's that. But
no, I know.
It's called The Misfits, and it's like a heist movie, but like it's just so strange. You know,
is it a comedy?
It's like a comedy heist movie, mostly action-y heist stuff.
Okay.
Basically, these criminals are like Robin Hoods. They steal from the rich and give to the less fortunate.
Oh,
and they hire Pierce Brosnan, who is a master thief, to basically break into a prison in some strange, like, you know, Arab nation It's a private prison, too, so, like, the whole commentary on, like, the guy they're stealing from is owns a private prison, and he keeps the gold for a bunch of terrorists that he's financing in the prison. So they're stealing gold to stop state-funded terror.
I see.
It was whole very convoluted, and, you know, it was a fun watch, but, you know.
Is it new? Was this a new?
It's very new. It came out, like, 2021. I think it came out this year. So.
Okay. Well, look at that.
And that's basically it. I mean, I do a lot of comfort watching, as you know. So like right now I'm in like my third rewatch of episodes of Modern Family. And I'm just like needing to get in the mood to do the Fear Street. And by get in the mood, I mean, you just need to tell me when I need to watch it all by, and then I will make sure that I watch it.
I know. I maybe we should just have like a slumber party and you just come over and we'll just watch all three of them back to back.
I would love that.
Yeah. Pop popcorns and do that.
Yeah.
I just finished up a big rewatch of all like the Friday the 13th movie. Not all of them. I watched the first eight, so through Jason Takes Manhattan, and then also the remake that they brought out a few years ago after we kind of talked about, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake last time. I was like, oh, you know. Or did I watch that before? I don't know. Time gets all screwy with me these days with school and whatnot. But it was fun. Just a, you know, I hadn't watched them after we did our Friday the 13th episode. I'm like, I'm just going to keep going because they were all available on something, Shudder or Stars.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. We need to go to the movies soon because there's a lot that's out that we need.
I know. I still haven't seen The Forever Purge, and I really do want to go see that. It's been tough. I just haven't prioritized.
It's
going
to be like 7 p.m. one night, like one day a week.
Well, they also aren't doing like the early showings like they used to. Like the movies have really cut back. So it's like you have to go to a movie at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, I don't want to do that. You know, like.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't blame them. Like, if restaurants are having a time, restaurants and bars are having a time trying to find help, can you only imagine, like, movie theaters?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a bummer because I do miss getting up early on a Sunday. Because, you know, you can go in and see a movie at 10. It's still only noon. You still have the whole day. But, like, if you have to leave on a Sunday at, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's like, ugh. Just when you don't want to do anything, really.
Yeah.
You know, because I get up and I have book club, and then we do freight school usually on Sundays. And so it's just, like, it's a nice leisurely day.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, well, now we have to get dressed and go to the movies. And then we come back home. It's time to go to bed. That's no fun. Again, this is so exciting. I love talking about all this stuff because our listeners are just like, this is the
riveting
shit. All right. So, well, I guess that there's nothing else, which I don't think. It's always after we finish talking that I go, oh, that's right. I wanted to mention 600 other things. But I guess that's a good place to stop. You know, keep reading books, children. And let us know what you thought of like the Fear Street movies if you finished them. You know, did you read the books? Are you an R.L. Stine fan?
That seemed like a like you were inviting people to give you a bad opinion about them.
They can. They're welcome to. You know, but we'll, you know, I don't know. You could just send us your opinions now and we'll talk about them at a later date. All right. So anyways, we'll be right back to discuss Jeepers Creepers. Oh my gosh.
Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
All right, welcome back. So yes, this week we are continuing on looking at some, you know, road horror, summer horror vibes, you know. Getting in your car, driving across country can only mean bad things. So as we're learning, Joe, you're never going to want to drive anywhere ever again.
Oh, I know.
So this week we are doing Jeepers Creepers, which is from 2001. So this is also an anniversary. It's 20th anniversary would be, I think it's August 31st. Yeah, August 31st, ooh, 2001. So that's coming up. 20 years of Jeepers Creepers. Yeah, so written and directed by Victor Salva. It's got Gina Phillips in it and another FAP.
Another
inspiration for little Joe here and Justin Long.
Yeah, Joe's fapping spank bank from the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I love some Justin Long.
Yeah, but we got them, Gina and Justin, as Trish and Derry Jenner, you know, brother and sister who are driving back. I think it's from college. They're like on break. I don't know if it's summer break or what break, but some kind of break in Florida. They're driving home.
It's spring break.
Oh, it is spring break. Driving home, and they get attacked by this real asshole, and you know, then the movie goes on. I got Patricia Belcher and Eileen Brennan. And Eileen Brennan is so wonderful in this. I just still, like I said, if I don't turn into Little Edie, then I think I'm going to turn into this woman. You know, yeah, with all my cats.
For all you gays out there, Eileen Brennan played Zandra from Will and Grace.
Right.
So I half expected her to come out and be like, what the hell is this, bitch?
she's so great in this. Anyway, so where are we? Yeah, directed, written by Victor Salva. Ugh, we'll get into that. That's a whole conversation. But as usual, dear class... And by class, I mean Joe, even though I guess that's an oxymoron.
First of all, how dare you? How very dare you?
Joe, what did you think of the film?
And
you had never seen it before.
I had never seen it before.
Very excited.
You know, I was a kid who had USA growing up, so access to the USA channel, which means that at some point I saw parts of the different Jeepers Creepers films. And honestly, I thought the one with the school bus was the first Jeepers Creepers. I didn't know it was number two. So the whole time this is starting out, I'm like, when do they get on the bus? When do they get on the bus? And then I realized, like, oh shit, it's actually not. And I really, truly have not seen anything about this film, which was upsetting because... Typically with a film that like I have heard about, it's, you know, because of the culture, mm-hmm, I know something going into it and I'm like, feel, you know, a little bit more relaxed. But I was a little on edge for this one because I had no idea what was happening or going on, much like the Jenner siblings had no idea what was
right.
going on. So, yeah, I mean, it was a fun watch. I don't think I'd watch it again.
But I do want to watch the rest of the films.
I would definitely show you part two. I enjoy part two. I think it's, it's fun again. It's a little bit more like Hitchcockian in the sense that, you know, they're on a bus and it breaks down. And then that is the general setting of the rest of the film is just them on this bus. There are some other things going on out in the world that, you know, inform the story. But for the most part, they're just kind of trapped on a bus. And I like those kind of movies where like people are like trapped in a space. You know, that again is very, you know, old school horror. I would definitely watch
in an open space too. Like they're trapped on the road in the
middle of nowhere. Yeah. On a bus. And it is creepy. But, for today we'll talk about, we're going to talk about the movie you have now seen. Yay. Yeah. Now, did you know, because I realized that on Fright School, we haven't done many like creature movies. When you think about it, most of the movies we do, it's either the monster is like a vampire, which is a changed person, sometimes werewolves, you know, some of the monster stuff we've done, like The Fly, those are still, they're human stories, you know, they're like human monsters. We did The Blob, which is, that is kind of a creature feature.
The Thing.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, we did do The Thing. But I was sitting back and thinking like, man, we haven't done many like creature features.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to do some more. I have plans. It's one of those things where I have them on the back burner all the time, and I'm like, okay, well, we've got to get to that movie, but we just haven't.
We've explored a lot of human-on-human monstrosity.
Yeah, for the most part. So did you know did you know that it was a monster?
I did.
Okay.
And that's mainly because, I've been to so many cons with you that, like, you see stuff. You see, like, it's the creature, you know, the creeper. Creeper, or whatever the fuck they call him. Rucker Hauer Cicada Man.
Yes, I forgot. The Rutger. So this is the Rutger Hauer Cicada Monster Picture Show.
Yes.
When you said cicada monster, I thought that was so funny because then it talked about the 23 years. And I was like, you're on the right, you know?
Oh, he looks like it. And I just kept thinking like, okay, this is mainly for Matt Kelly because I know he'll know what I'm talking about. He looked like the creeper, his outfit, his like, you know, coat that he's wearing and the hat look very much like Rucker Hauer from The Tenth Kingdom, this miniseries that NBC did in the late 90s. And he's plays the huntsman as in Snow White and the Huntsman. And so he has like, you know, the long white hair and the wide hunter's cap and all this stuff. And so I was like, oh, fuck, that's like that look like the Huntsman, which, you know, he was hunting people.
It's true.
But then, you know, he reveals his face and he just looks like this giant cicada, you know, thing. So the Rucker Hauer Cicada Monster Picture Show.
I love that. Rutger Hauer Cicada Monster. Which I do definitely agree with you. So I think this, I am kind of excited to have this conversation, but I will warn our dear listener, you know, content warning. Victor Salva, the writer director of this film, is a convicted child molester, and he also had child pornography. He actually made pornography with the child that he was, it was a child actor on one of his first movies. And so he served, he was, you know, prosecuted, he was sentenced to, I think, like 3 years. It's, you know, again, it's so ridiculous. This was back in either the late 80s, early 90s. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about that, but I want to stick a pin in that for a second, but I did want to just warn that, you know, this conversation is, you know, might be a little triggering, but I think it is important to contextualizing this film. But first, I also wanted to, after we watched the movie, I showed you an episode of Unsolved Mysteries from like 1990, where the entire like opening of it was like exactly like this movie. And that's based on this man, Dennis DePue, who murdered his wife and these passerby driving along the road just happened to see him like with this like bloody sheet, and they were like, oh, well, we got to figure out what's going on here, and, you know, got sort of involved. But so the film kind of has, it's one of those like based on a true story things, but it's like
ripped from the headlines.
Right, exactly. But it's not really. And again, Salva actually has not confirmed or denied that it was based on that case. But watching that episode,
it's too clear.
I mean, not only does it open, and they're kind of driving sort of the same color car. It's not a classic like that. It's just kind of like a old school Buick-y kind of car from the 80s. It looked like a very typical 80s car, to me. When you see an
like a Datsun.
But kind of that same gray blue color. They're driving on the lonely road. They like get chased, you know, by the van. They play a game, like the couple, and this is like their true story. This is they're like, we played this game where we make up names with the license plates, and thankfully we did that because we remembered what his license plate was, and we're able to tell police. It was an abandoned school instead of a church, but still kind of very similar looking in the film, kind of how degraded it was, and then him like chasing them and how they kind of pull off the road. So it was just like, I feel like he had to have seen that at some point because it is like almost identical. And I'll try to make sure to remember to, I think there's a video on YouTube that compares the shots so that you can see just how much they look
the same.
So for those of you who grew up on Unsolved Mysteries, I loved Unsolved Mysteries as a kid. Did you ever watch that? That shit was freaky sometimes.
That shit really fucked me up.
Yeah.
Like, I remember my aunt and uncle were like, they were watching it one night and we were there and, you know, we were just watching whatever they're watching. And they had like the lights off in the living room. And it was this particular episode of Unsolved Mysteries had something to do with like a crucifix that was moving. Like it was like Jesus's head over the course of like 2 months was like moving from one side to the other or something like that. And I remember freaking the fuck out and like couldn't stare at a crucifix for long after that. Cause I'm like, oh fuck, it's moving. Jesus is watching me.
He watches from the wall.
He's the watcher from. He who is behind the rose or something like that.
Oh yeah, that's he who walks behind the rose.
He who walks behind the rose.
That's the Children of the Corn. But I was thinking of Carrie, where she writes a poem about him, about Jesus watching from the wall.
This has nothing to do with anything, but it reminded me of a small joke. If you may humor me for a minute, it was about these two boys who are, this one boy who is doing terrible in mathematics and at his private Catholic school. And his mother takes him to church to pray on it. And then he ends up becoming really better at mathematics. And the mom's like, what happened? He's like, well, after you took me to church, I saw what they did to that man on the plus sign. And I...
No. Oh, Joseph. That's delightful.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We just got to sit with that for a second. I'm sure our dear, dear listener right now is having in apoplexy from laughing so hard. You're a delight, Joe. Okay, so back to the film. So... to jump into kind of like analyzing the film. So, you know, again, it's a creature feature. What's there to analyze? That's what you're asking yourself right now. But as we stated earlier, this is Pride Month, and this film actually gets a pretty intense queer reading. I found like 4 or 5 articles or like papers in different textbooks analyzing Jeepers Creepers from this kind of a couple different angles actually of queerness. So one was in New Horror Film and Television, which has Freddie and Jesse on the cover, of course, from Freddy's Revenge. But it has a piece in it called My Brother's Creeper, Towards a Queer Rereading of Victor Salva's Jeepers Creepers. That's one. Another was... let me see. Oh, no, I lost it. Oh, it's because it's on the other... I have another book. Desire. It's like
Death and Desire or Despair and Desire, and it has a whole thing about like Jeepers Creepers, and there's lots of BuzzFeed type articles like, you know, the creepers gay and everybody's gay actually, that's really the truth. So from now on, every film,
the article is everybody's gay.
Every film we do from here on out, it's either queer or, you know, we're not even going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in if you're in, like.
No, not everything can be about gay people. Or can it? We're going to prove that today, I guess. So what I think is interesting is that like the queer subtext kind of operates on a couple of different ways here. Because one, we can read Derry, the Justin Long character, as mm-hmm. a queer character. He gets queer-coded in ways. But what's kind of more important, this ties back to what I was saying at the beginning of the piece, is like when we talk about like the art of monstrous men, and like Victor Salva is a monster, you know, like he's a bad person who committed a terrible act and then just kind of got to move on, like Roman Polanski, like obviously it just happened with Bill Cosby. Again, not a declaration of his innocence. He admitted, it's on the record, he admitted to what he did to those women, but he's free because of a technicality. But I just wanted to say that. So,
good thing Dexter's coming back.
Right, exactly. But it's just kind of like sad to see, like, you know, so many survivors of assault that I think are really demoralized by sort of the story and all the support he's getting from people that, like, don't seem to understand, like, y'all did, like, he did it. Like, he said he admitted to the horrible things that he did. Like, that's not under... It's not up for debate. You know, we just have a shitty justice system that we've always had. But anyways, not the point. Well, kind of the point, I guess, really, in the end of what I'm trying to talk about. But Bill Cosby, Woody Allen, again, you know, just we have every day we deal with like art that we, you know, engage with, we like, that is made by people who are not great, obviously. And so the other way this film gets analyzed is kind of in that like monster telling on himself kind of thing, where the creeper sort of represents like this kind of a deeply, I think, internalized homophobia that Victor Salva may have now. And he's talked about his like life as like a kid. He was very brutalized, you know, physically abused and such, and, you know, so he kind of grew up and he was kicked out of his house for coming out as gay. Again, not to victim, you know, give him a victimhood, but it's just like the, you know, this is just the truth of kind of where he's working from. So for him to come out and make a film in which this monster has to like, you know, so Justin Long, you know, he's the main character. He's pretty, we were talking about it before, he's kind of like, he's feminized in the way that like Johnny Depp is feminized in A Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, the first one.
He's got like very classic like twink features.
Yes, yeah, exactly,
like, you know,
very youthful looking. Yeah. You know, kind of looks like Prince Eric come to life, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. Just like as skinny,
his hair is just great movement.
Exactly,
he has full lips.
Joe, now come on, let's hold off here before save that for later. You're just so ready to like, yes, and with the curve of his, yeah. But anyways, the point is that like in the film, Justin Long obviously is the, you know, in the end we know the creeper is in pursuit of him, that what he wants is what Derry has and not Trish. But then also in the film, you know, he finds the first, when they see the creeper throw the body down the pipe and Derry falls in after and he opens it up, it's kind of the same kind of looking guy. You know, he doesn't look great because he's all bluish and dying, but he's like pretty, you know, he's got dark hair, kind of the same thing, pretty lips. And then when he's like looking around, a lot of the other bodies are clearly male, like young males. They're talking about, you know, it's got like a folklore element, like an urban legend, urban myth kind of thing, with like, oh, remember that couple that disappeared? Well, there they are up on the wall. So, I mean, there are some women, obviously, there are some female victims, but it does seem like the creeper mostly is going after young mm-hmm. men.
Yeah.
And of a certain stripe.
And, I mean, not to get super graphic on you, but, like, the man that Derry, you know, frees momentarily before he dies, I mean, the creeper, He like has his chest like ripped open.
Yeah.
So that means that the creeper, you know, ripped him, split him open and entered him.
Right. And then put him back together, like stitched him back together.
It's... Which, you know, I mean, we've all had dates like that. I mean, it's right. Just...
Sometimes you meet the one.
Yeah.
But anyways, the point is that, you know, the creeper obviously has like a taste, you know, it seems to be very queer coded in a way,
yes.
You know, these kind of young, pretty guys that he's going after. And then in the opening, not to spoil it too much for you, but and it's within the first few minutes, the second film, the first character who dies, or you assume dies, is a young boy, is like 12 or 13, like, you know, a young kid. So again, it's just kind of like, it's interesting. It's like he's working out something through this monster, you know,
which
it, like,
is,
represents this, like,
yeah, which is not typical of horror films, as like in most horror films it's the object of a desire is usually female or is a woman.
Well, typically in the horror that we have looked at, yeah, we talk about the final girl. We have final boys, although obviously Derry is not one of them because he does not survive the film, which again is another thing about this movie. The creature wins. You know, he gets what he wants and escapes and does not like really suffer too much. I mean, yeah, he gets beat up. Again, gets beat up. You know, a very, you know, it's like a gay bashing. Gets beat up, gets kind of mutilated, but hey, gets himself back up, grabs the boy he's looking for, and, you know, flies off with him. So it's like this, it's this very interesting when we talk about who's making film, and, you know, you talk about how, like, oh, horror films are misogynistic, and it's like these guys who write these films, and then they get to, mm-hmm. You know, play out their, like, fantasies of fetishizing and subjugating women. So when you have, like, a queer person, and not only just a queer person, and again, we're both queer and we're not pedophiles, so I'm not trying to conflate, but I'm just saying,
I got you.
When you have somebody who has been convicted of pedophilic acts and child pornography, who's getting to make a horror film in which he brutalizes a young twinkish kind of guy, it just, you have to, we kind of have to step back and, like, just analyze what that means and what that kind of looks like in the context of this film. And this film was actually pretty popular. It's had two sequels, and there's going to be another sequel coming, I believe, Jeepers Creepers Reborn. There's been backlash. Obviously, the young man that he assaulted and filmed has come out and protested about and talked about Salva and tried to get people, because he directed Powder as well, that film. Did you ever see that, Powder?
No.
Oh, so it's like a 90s film. We can't get into Powder right now. That's a whole thing. But I think he directed that as well. And so, like, he protested, but, you know, of course, it's been kind of ignored. So, as, you know, as happens in society, we don't take victims very seriously, and especially even more so sometimes, like, you know, children, you mm-hmm. know, it gets a whole other, like, level. So again, fuck Victor Salva, but I do think the film is worthy of, like, you know, analysis of what that means, because I didn't have this information when I first saw it, and I didn't think it was necessarily very queer. I mean, I thought Justin Long, you know, of course, I think I was 16 when this movie came out, 16 or 17. So, of course, he's very pretty. But he is kind of queer in a way, because, like, you know, he's...
has a good relationship with his sister.
Right. They really talk about her relationships, not his. She makes a couple of homophobic kind of jokes, you know, about, like, oh, his, like, dorm mates are dyeing his stuff pink. Mm-hmm. He has, like, a tattoo around his belly button that I think is rather feminine, you know, in a sense, especially for 2001. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's such an odd, shitty place to put it. Like,
I mean, I think it's very sexy in a way, but it's just, like, again, why would a guy put, like, a tattoo of a rose around his belly button? It's just, it is kind
of, if they were to make this more explicitly queer, it would be like a belly ring.
Well, exactly, which I had. I had a belly button piercing for a long time when I was 18, and when I turned 18, that was the first. After I got a tattoo, no, the tattoo came after. That's right. I got the tattoo when I was 21 because I could legally drink, and I had a few drinks with some friends, and we were like, "Let's go get tattoos." I was like, "Okay, but we have to do it right now, or I'll back out." So I had to go and get it right then and there. But I did get my belly button ring, my belly button ring when I was 18, and it was very a queer, very very queer thing to do at that time. Not so much like the earrings, like for a while I think like getting your, what was that, your left ear pierced.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that was the thing. But to say I'm queer, but I think a belly button ring was very queer, especially when I was like 18. You know, we're talking very many years ago. Yeah. It seems now we're so old. But anyways, we kind of got, we're sort of conflating the two conversations, but whatever. We've kind of moved on to Derry and discussing like his particular queerness. But there were some other things I did want to hit on with the creeper as well, because when Derry gets into his like his basement house of pain, mm-hmm. it's like this monster is fucking, he's kind of artsy, you know, he's carved himself in a table, he's made a Sistine Chapel, which again, like Derry makes that reference later, calling it like a fucked up, you know, Sistine Chapel, which was done by Michelangelo, who is also, you know, gets queer reading.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we can really prove that he was queer, but he wrote some rather florid poetry.
But he was one, yeah. He was one of us.
Just go, yes, he was one. Which, again, sort of speaks to that, like, it's this, like, monster, but it's, like, artistic, mm-hmm. you know, and it's kind of like, again, I just think I'm seeing more and more, like, these reflections of, like, Salva in this creature, in this yeah. sort of monstrous male sexuality, this monstrous gay sexuality.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so let's take it, so like this idea of the abuser, the monster telling on themselves, I mean, right. We don't have to look too far. Louis C.K.
Like, right, right. No, I mean, we've definitely seen that, you yeah. know. Bill Cosby did the whole joke about Spanish Fly, which we've yeah. talked about with
Mending
yeah. monologues.
Louis C.K., Aziz Ansari to a certain extent, but not so much. And yeah, so it's like there, that idea. And again, it's, you know, this is why, like, it's so fascinating with film, because it's like, it is an art form, but, you know, it's meant for such mass production. So, you know, there, but he's definitely trying to tell, it's definitely interesting, the story he's trying to tell. I mean, we didn't even talk about the fact that, like, the monster was totally, like, making out with the head.
Well, right, exactly. Because so much of this is intertwined, I was yeah. like, I wanted to kind of talk just explicitly about the creature first, and then kind of get into how Derry is mm-hmm. queer-coded, but it's just hard to, you know, because they're intertwined, and they're mirroring each other in the yeah. film, you know, so it's like you kind of go back and forth. But yeah, obviously, that's an extremely erotic scene, while he's like, it looks like he's making out with the head of this, I mean, you know, it's a cop, but still, like, he's a cute guy. You know, so it's,
well,
like
Trish even said, he's just right, like, oh, yeah. he looks like a strippogram,
right, yeah, you know, so obviously he's kind of also sexualized in a way, and so for the creature to do that to him and not like the female cop, and again, and he also ignores Trish large. I mean, once he realizes he's not, that's not, you're not the one, I'm not looking mm-hmm. for you, it's him. And with Giselle, you know, who comes in just in the nick of time to tell these white people, like, what's going on, gives them the whole, you know, she's been practicing it. Like, I'm just imagining her driving in her blue Winnebago, like, every 23rd spring for 23 days it gets to eat. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna say. Yeah, that's it. It lungs so it can breathe. Write this down, Giselle. Write it down.
And this film, you know, I mean, again, horror noir, right, as the as a foundational text of Fright School, like, this film gave you the two things that, like, modern films try not to give you, which is, like, a horror film where a black person dies.
Right.
I think it's the first on-screen.
This is very much in it.
It's the first on-screen death, I think, is in the film. Like, you actually see
right, yeah, her, know, yeah, the cop, yeah.
Yeah, so it's this, you know, black lady cop dies, and then you get the magical Negro, which,
right.
you know, again, it's just, and what's interesting, right, is, and I don't know if you have something more to talk about, let me know, because I might derail us with this thought.
No, if you want to talk a little, is this about Giselle?
It's about Giselle.
Yeah, 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 we can talk about that.
So with Giselle, right, this idea of the magical Negro, it reminded me a lot of The Shining and how she she has the shine a little bit, which which again, I don't know if this is intentional, but you know, Derry, you have a cyclical monster that cannot be stopped, and then you have a young boy named Derry, like the town of Derry, Maine. So
just
so
spelled differently.
Yeah, there's
Some nods to
Stephen King in that regard. And that's kind of when she comes in and she's like, you know, I have to warn you. I'm this oracle that's telling you all these things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can't be denied. I do absolutely think that that's how she's kind of operating on. And again, that's not always... Of all the other like kind of things that I'm wondering about that are malicious in this, like what sort of intent Salva had, you know, I'm not sure how aware, you know, he might be of that trope, but it just it's so insidious in culture, you know, to have that sort of character that he's writing. It's just like, oh yeah, of course there's going to be a psychic black lady in it, because you always have to have that, you know.
And like, it could be, and again,
like, and I'm not saying that's right, or I mean, just saying that it's just so, it's so lazy in a way that's just, you know. And again, this is a 20-year-old film, so
and we also don't know if it was him, because it could be the fault of the casting people. It could be the fault of, you know, the producers saying no, we want it to be a black lady. Like, he could just be written as a psychic.
Yeah,
it didn't have to mean, like, there was nothing stopping Margaret Cho from being the one coming in and being like.
Is that what you want? Is that who you're going to picture from now on?
Yes, exactly. I'm just going to picture Margaret Cho as Giselle. And in the remake, that's who we'll have.
Lord. So you're just going to trade a magical Asian person, which is also another trope, Joe. So I don't know.
But it'll be a magical Asian person that is self-aware of being magically Asian.
I see. So she'll come in and be like, I know how this looks.
That's why it's Margaret Cho as well. It's like, guys, I know how this looks, but, you know, I gotta tell you.
Well, anyway, I do agree with the assertion. Like, she absolutely is operating within that trope. Some other like stray observations, just that kind of also speak to like the queer subtext with Derry, is like one of the first things he says is gay fever. So it's like, and then gay forever with the license plate, that's kind of where his brain goes. So you're just like, I do think that we can kind of also think about like
absolutely
those sorts of clues that he might be a queer character. Again, it's not explicit at all. We're looking for ourselves in a film, you know, so out there somewhere, some straight guy who's like, no, what? I'm totally Derry. Like, this is me and I'm straight. And that's okay. That's allowed. He can have that too.
He sure can.
But you cannot pry Justin Long from Joe's fat bank if he wants him to be there. Stop objectifying people, Joe.
So, I mean, we bring it up, our conversation, go check it out with Michael Verratti, right? Where, like, the other thing, why Jeepers Creepers is in the queer canon, and, you know, again, outside of all of the awfulness and again, we've talked about the monster, like, the art of monstrous men, their ghosts that haunt their work. So, in this instance, it's like, it really is truly a queer...
It feels really on the nose.
Oh, yeah, it feels really on the nose, but also, it's just one of those things where it's like the queer coding is both in the subject of the violence and in the aggressor, right? So like, as both, we are, you know, again, it's that idea of queer coding and queer horror, where we are both the victim and we are both the monster and the victim. There's empathy on both sides of it, for, you know, because we can be the Laurie and the Sydney. I mean, not in this case. He died.
Right. But yeah, he doesn't survive.
But like, you know, he is we're the monster in this way. And now when you add the Salva stuff into it, it's even more insidious that that's the case. Because it's speaking something that's like, it's painting with a very negative hue.
Yeah, and again, I think this ties it to like really classical gothic like horror, you know, when you think of like Dracula and like vampires in the early, like in the, you know, the time that Bram Stoker is writing, you know, in the 1800s, mm-hmm. and in the early 1900s, you know, when we think about how queer sexuality gets represented in like vampirism and other sorts of monsters, but they're also beautiful and they're tragic. And there's like a, you know, there's a part of them that's always like, well, I can't help who I am. Like this is, I'm a monster, you know, and we don't have that here necessarily, but I do think that it just speaks to this interesting, like internalized homophobia. But also it's like, I don't know, like, is the guy like bragging when he's writing, you know, because he like gets away with it and the monster kind of does continue on from there, you know, in the sequels. And it's just a very, I had never really considered Jeepers Creepers this deeply. Like, it is a movie we were joking before, like, you know, this Sam Scrunch will tell you that I do like the film a lot. I don't know exactly what it, I think it's because it's just such a like a ridiculous monster movie, you know, and nothing like that had kind of like at that time in 2001 before 9/11 had happened, so we weren't yet into like torture porn, but like Scream had been happening. We'd had these kind of meta films for this like kind of really silly creature feature to come out. And then it's like a road movie, which I love a road movie. Again, I tie this a lot to my experience of Joyride, which I love Joyride as well. And we'll have to watch that sometime because I think contextually they're very similar movies, you know, kind of like, you know, we're driving someplace and we're getting harassed by this dude on the road. I like the atmosphere of it. I like the way it looks. It goes 0 to 60. I mean, we're in the film really fast. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy the film. And then when I found out all this stuff about Salva, which has only been really knowledge to me for a couple of years, which again is why we've never really done this film yet, because I wasn't sure how I wanted to like contextualize it. Cause again, it is like Rosemary's Baby. I love that film. To know all that stuff about Roman Polanski is really difficult, and it adds this whole other layer of meaning to Rosemary's Baby when you're talking about a man who violates the bodily autonomy
of a woman,
and of women, of other women, and then makes a film about that.
Yeah.
You just have to like,
and that woman is Mia Farrow,
right,
also,
exactly.
You know,
it's exactly, yeah, it just becomes so much more complicated. And so kind of knowing this about this film again, it does underscore like what our show is about, analyzing horror from this like lens of like why we make horror. And here we have a very obvious case if you're aware of, you know, what's going on. And again, you don't have to, you can watch the movie and just enjoy it and not think about any of this stuff, but to kind of know that adds this whole other layer of like just the specter, you know, again, of like the monstrous man. To kind of move on, just to wrap up here, something else I think is pretty fun about the movie as well, especially at this time in my life when I was watching it, is also obsessed with like urban legends. Mm-hmm. And so things like the Mothman, the Jersey Devil. Have you ever heard of the Jersey Devil?
Uh-huh.
Spring-Heeled Jack from London.
The Chupacabra.
Yeah, the Chupacabra, like those sorts of things. Urban legends, monster mythology. I just always like the movie in that way too, because you think about like, you know, you're driving on some back road and something just attacks you and it's not really human, or you see something. And I love those kinds of stories. Now, again, I don't necessarily believe in the Mothman or the Jersey Devil or things like that, but contextualizing again, this just adds a whole other. This is a very American film, you know.
Yes, yes.
So back to like our first season and examining like, you know, the nature of American horror. You know, we love to drive and be on the open road, and it's this thing of hope and of beauty, and we're going to visit family, or we're going to our dreams, or we're driving into our future, and it gets completely sidelined by some creature out there in the desert.
The open road is a very American notion.
Yeah. So this is one of those movies that really kind of also plays
as I'm
into
saying
that.
It's very colonial. It's like we're going to do something. Mm-hmm. On parts unknown, and we're gonna colonize the fuck out of it.
Right. It underlines, it underscores a lot of those things. So anyways, if dear listener, the next time you watch Jeepers Creepers, you're gonna have a whole new view, purview for it, or you're gonna be like, these motherfuckers are crazy. I have to stop listening to this show.
Or you can do what I will do in the future, which is, you know, just put on Jeepers Creepers. Cheaper's Creepers.
Yeah, the Rutger Hauer Cicada Monster Picture Show.
Yes, you just, you know, go to your local Rite Aid, buy the, you know, or Costco, buy the Costco-sized bottle of Jergens.
No, stop. Oh my gosh. I didn't know. I don't know why I didn't realize where you were going. He is pretty, though.
You shut that down hard.
Oh, gosh. You're going to get us demonetized. I'm kidding. We're not monetized. I just always hear them say that on YouTube.
Demonetized, deplatformed.
Yeah. So there we go. Jeepers Creepers 2001. This was like, I feel like this was the last horror film released before September 11th happened.
And look what happened.
Right.
And it's interesting, right? Because it's a 20th anniversary. 3 more years, the creeper will come back.
That's true. Yeah, I was just kind of thinking about like his Derry. What made me look it up was Derry in the beginning, where he's like, where they're talking about whether their mom is happy or not, and it's like, she just doesn't seem as happy as she used to be. And he goes, well, who is? And I was like, was this before or after? Like, I mean, it obviously would have been produced long before, because I knew it came out in 2001, so they would have filmed it before, but I was just wondering about, like, contextualizing that after. Yeah. I definitely saw it after. I did not see this in the theater, but I was just kind of also thinking about that, how the whole world changed.
Prescient.
Just a few months.
Unbelievably prescient.
Yeah, or not even, just a few days after this film was released to theaters, so... Alrighty. Well, there we go. Oh my gosh. There was so much. My list, it was so huge to like try to squeeze all this in. So again, dear listener, this is the lecture. You know, this is just hitting the high points. Check out the notes, the show notes. Read the articles. These people have put a lot of
time
and effort.
Don't just show for the asynchronous lecture, okay? Right. Do everything else that you're supposed to do outside.
Did you do the reading? All right. I don't really even make you read the articles anymore. I used to. I used to send them to you and beg you to read them.
You do when it's something that's super duper important. You'll be like, please read this before. I'm like, okay. If you said please... And, you know, God knows what kind of, you know, hoodoo curse you're going to put on me if I don't read the article. This is what's going to happen. In the horror film of Fright School, when we do, you know, Shudder Presents Fright School.
Right.
You're going to, like, go missing, and all of the clues to find you are going to be in the articles that I've never read. And so, sorry, Joshua, but you're fucked.
It's true. That is so true. All right. Well, with that, we wish you a happy Pride if you're listening in San Diego or in another place where Pride is still raging.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, have a good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
Ha 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 ha